Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jack Spencer, Sarah Werfel, Jacob Kanzler. Sarah, thanks for being on the podcast today. This is very exciting. It's great to have you back.
Happy to join you guys.
All right, so we've got a few issues that I want to talk about before we get to our special guest this week, Dr. Rob Davidson, who is running in the 2nd Congressional District. He's got some very interesting things to say, very optimistic in the 2nd District for a Democrat, not anything that you usually hear. But let's talk about some of the bigger issues of this past week. And the first one I want to address is who did what when it came to the prosecution of Larry Nassar? And did somebody drop the ball when it came to the Larry Nassar prosecution? That was the insinuation of a Michigan Republican Party internet ad. As far as we know, this did not go on broadcast TV. We don't know if it went on the radio. I don't believe it has. I don't know if it's gone on cable TV yet. But it insinuates that Gretchen Whitmer did not prosecute Larry Nassar when she was the prosecutor in Ingham County for 6 months. And maybe she should have. And this got her very agitated, guys, as you know. When anybody ever criticizes your work as a professional, you get a little defensive. I think she got a little defensive. And then she accused Bill Schuette of lying, which, of course, is going to get him excited, questioning his integrity. Jack, let's start with you here. What were your thoughts as you saw this back and forth with Whitmer and Schuette in regards to who should have done what?
Well, I don't know that you can blame Schuette in the context of being behind by 10 points and trying to find something topical with what's been going on with Washington on Kavanaugh and just trying to see any potential chink in his opponent's armor to try to throw it out there. I think it's pretty obvious. So this would be more aimed, I think, at making perhaps progressive women on the Democrat side have second thoughts about Gretchen Whitmer. I don't know if it necessarily boosts him in any other way than that. As to whether or not it would be successful or not, I think it's questionable. We're talking about this entire array of things that happened for all these years and everything else, and here, it's kind of like blaming somebody who went in for 2 minutes in a basketball game and not even, at the end of the game, and blaming them for an entire loss or something. By the way, it's not even a loss. He's in jail.
Right. So you can't even accuse a government of failing, so if anything.
I guess on the one hand, it's sort of like, well, maybe you got to automatically do it and see what happens. But I'm far from certain that this is going to pay off in any big way.
Sarah Werfel from Trescott Rossman, our special guest. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, two things. I think you kind of hit it on it. One is who did or knew what when, and I think it's hard to ascertain that from the actual process of that, but it should be, this is the part, I think, what's wrong with politics these days, is it focuses on things when it should be on the policy and the prosecution and justice for these survivors rather than, and having it be about them rather than dragging this kind of down into the gutter.
You're talking about this being more of an issue of personal pride for these two individuals as opposed to focusing on the fact that justice was served.
Right. And Larry Nassar is behind bars and is going to be a long time, and not taking the survivors and putting them in that position and having it be on what's right for these women and justice.
So, Jacob, I sat through both press conferences on Friday, the one with Whitmer and the one with Bill Schuette, and I walked away wondering, why can't both of these folks be right? Because on the one hand, you had Gretchen Whitmer talking about the fact that she went and got the evidence for the U.S. Attorney's Office that led to his initial prosecution, successful prosecution on pornography charges. And then the MSU police went to Bill Schuette to get the prosecution on the criminal side as far as the sexual assaults. So I guess I can see both of them being correct. What we don't know is what the Michigan State Police was doing. And why didn't they go to the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office? We have no hard evidence that they ever did.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway from your observations of going to both and listening, carefully to the details, is the question is, can these two accounts be mutually exclusive or not? And maybe you're making the argument that, that's not, it's not one thing or the other, And so, and then the other thing I would add is, in terms of the question you asked about the MSU police, the other risk you might run into that kind of gets to Jack's point of whether this is going to be an effective kind of campaign tactic on the part of Republicans who kind of initiated this, is are the details going to get muddied? I mean, are the people going to understand, like, you know, these things we talk about, you know, you don't prosecute over multiple jurisdictions, or, you know, we got warrants and the MSU police, like the role of these different agencies investigating a crime. I think it all kind of gets muddied, and because it's obviously a lot more complicated than you failed to or you did prosecute Larry Nassar in the right time, which is what they're trying to simplify the message to.
And it's hard to also keep this into perspective, because we're talking about the political aspects of this, but just from a practical standpoint, going back in time to 2016, let's remember Gretchen Whitmer was put in that position because the former office holder, Stu Dunnings, had resigned in disgrace because of some sex trafficking crimes. See, we're getting back into the whole sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual exploitation here again. But so Stu Dunnings was out. Now, what he did or didn't do when he was prosecutor, I don't know if we're ever really going to know, and I don't know if it's really relevant. But she was only there for 6 months, and what kind of role was she having at that time as far as getting the office ready for the next person and taking on something of this magnitude? She said she wanted the attorney general to take it on because of all the other different jurisdictions. And given the atmosphere at that time, Jack, I don't know if we can necessarily blame her for that.
Well, if you only ran legitimate political ads, that would get rid of two-thirds of the ads that are out there. But I will come back to this to be on Shuey's side a little bit. I do think they are remiss if they had this in the can. We're going to do this at some point. We're going to come out, and it's something we got to try and hit her with. What I'm curious about, is this something that was going to be saved till like the last 2 weeks if we're still behind, and have they moved it up?
Okay. Well, that's a good question, too, because things haven't looked that great for the Shuey camp, seem to be stuck in neutral a little bit, and that's a possibility. All right, let's go to the next item on the agenda here. Beth Clement. And, Sarah, I wanted to start with you on this one. Beth Clement, the sitting Supreme Court justice who was nominated by the Republican Party amidst a lot of reservations from the delegates there, left off a door hanger that the Republican Party was circulating in some key swing districts to try and motivate their voters to get out and support their ticket. Her picture was left off this, even though the rest of the ticket for that particular area, and we know of Wayne County and Monroe County in particular. What's your thoughts on her being left off there because the Republican Party was concerned that they would not have the volunteers to distribute these hangers if her picture was on there?
Well, I think it's Beth Clement is exactly the type of justice that you would think Republican voters say they want, which is somebody who is a rule of law judge who looks at the merits of each case and makes the tough call. That's exactly the type of person that should be serving on the Michigan Supreme Court. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the next couple of months here.
And you have some experience with Beth Clement. You guys work together at the governor's office.
Right. She's whip smart. Sticks to her guns and her values and principles, and I have a lot of respect for her, and I think the Republican Party should as well.
Now, there's concerns out there that she's liberal. I mean, she was the swing vote that put Proposal 2 on the ballot, and also a vote to allow school districts to ban guns in their schools. You can say that she's liberal for those reasons.
Well, again, do you really want somebody who looks at the merits of each case and judges it based on what they see as the facts before the case? I think the open-ended question that the Republican Party has to answer here.
And you're making the argument that that's what
that's
was done in these cases.
And I think that's exactly from the Beth Clement that I know and have worked with. That's exactly what she did.
Well, Jacob?
To kind of get at your point, I mean, whether she's, you know, considered liberal or not, this is just kind of a confusing kind of messaging and tactics in the Republican Party, because you look at her, she was nominated at the convention almost over the will of a lot of delegates, and you were there.
Yeah.
And so there were, you know, it's kind of like the plan was, we're going to push her through to be our nominee. And then for them to do this again, and you look at their response and her story, at the whim of delegates, at their voice, it's like, well, if you're not going to stand behind her on this door hanger, why did you push through her nomination at the convention? It doesn't seem like those two things match up.
Any other thoughts on this, Jack?
Well, I think it comes back to the idea of maybe should judges be running a little separately from the party. And as far as the potential here, I see, depending, it's always tricky to handle these things, but the potential here is to make lemonade out of the lemon and say, get up there and say, hey, if you want somebody who's going to vote what their party wants, maybe you should vote for my opponent.
Yeah, vote for somebody else, don't vote for me. Yeah, does she have the money to put that message out there? Could appeal to a different group of voters altogether.
Well, you know, she's got to run with the hand she's dealt, and in some ways, a creative way of handling this could be very interesting.
You know, Sarah, you vote for two folks for Supreme Court on the ballot, and as far as I know, there's only two women who are running.
Right. Well, and I think it's something that really has to take a serious look at, because I think that message, especially with the circumstances we're seeing today, I think there's just a lot of folks who are fed up with kind of politics as usual and wanting to have people who will stand up and be independent and make the right call.
All right, Jacob, last thing I want to touch on, Bill Schuette investigating the Catholic Church, looking into sexual abuse among priests. This was a big issue back in 2002. I thought things got straightened up after that, but there's a lot of attorney generals taking a look at this issue now in 2018. Is the timing on this suspicious, do you think?
Well, I mean, people are always going to make that case with Bill Schuette. You know, his opponent.
He's being politically advantageous.
Yeah, I mean, opponents are always going to look at this, and I mean, you can build a case, you know, with timing on Flint, and there was documentation that, you know, people were putting complaints into his office well before he started this well-publicized criminal investigation. He was invited on by the MSU trustees to investigate the university well after kind of the big public outbreak of Larry Nassar. So I'm sure opponents and critics can always jump on that. I will point out that, you know, in terms of public timing, you see his colleagues across the U.S., including in New York and Pennsylvania, launching investigations similar to this after the Pennsylvania grand jury report came out of several dioceses there. You had the fallout from Archbishop McCarrick. So this is a very timely thing. I guess from his office standpoint, it makes sense to do this, and you kind of have to ask, what gain would he get from not doing this? And what would be the fallout from that politically and also, you know, Department of Attorney General stance?
Right. So, as far as this being political timing, Jack, we should mention that it's not like he came out with a press release and said, hey, this is what we're doing. This was dragged out of him by FOIAs that were submitted by news groups like Wood TV and ourselves. And they basically had to say, well, we have an investigation here. We just threw up this website. But on the other hand, he says he started in August, and based on the diocese that we contacted, they didn't know anything about this.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe this is something that that they do. I don't know how many things an attorney general starts or looks at or starts going down a road toward that we don't find out about it until a certain point, so I'm not sure about that.
If we ever find out
about
it.
But look, if they didn't do this and then he got hit with an ad about standing still while people in other states and so on were doing it, you know, everybody would be criticizing him for not having done it.
That's a good point. Any other thoughts you want to say on this one, Sarah?
No, other than just it is. It's like on one hand, a dated issue that had so much attention back at the time and action, and then also these timely instances, right, where things have come back up again, and it's an important, serious issue. So,
all right. Well, let's move on to talk with Dr. Rob Davidson in the second question. The other end of the line is Dr. Rob Davidson. He is the Democratic nominee in the 2nd District. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Now, usually we would not have the Democratic nominee on the 2nd Congressional District on the podcast, but you have run basically one of the most aggressive campaigns we've seen coming out of West Michigan from a Democrat for some time. You have taken this race as if you think you can win it. Do you really think you can win this?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, now more than ever, I think a little over a year ago when I decided to get into this, you know, I thought we could. We certainly had a lot of excitement on the ground, a lot of volunteers, a lot of people that were kind of remnants of the town hall, which is, you know, how I got into this, and of that, you know, Women's March and all that excitement that was going on last year. And we, you know, we thought that that was going to be enough. And somehow, you know, a little over a year later, now we have data. We, our team's knocked over 50,000 doors, and we understand what people are talking about at their doors. And the number one issue they're concerned about is healthcare, which, as a board-certified emergency physician working in the specialty for 20 years now, it's something that I get. I've been on the front lines for a very long time. We also have data from polling. We have data from our own poll from July, which, you know, tells us if people care a little bit about me and about the issues I'm talking about, in particular healthcare, and anti-corruption in Washington, and understand the contrast between myself and Congressman Huizenga on those issues in particular, you know, we can get this down to a 5-point race. And this is before knocking any doors, before going up on TV, before any type of digital persuasion ad. So when you have a race that looks like that, I mean, it's really among the most competitive races in the country. So now that I have this data, we've raised more money than the last 20 years of Democrats combined in this district. Unfortunately, 46 days ago, we got a little ways to go in that respect, but I know it's winnable for sure. And I'm glad I've been at it as hard as I have, because now that we're within 7 weeks, you know, it's nice to know that it's within reach.
You said you've raised some money. How much have you raised for your campaign?
Total to date, we just pushed over 800,000.
800,000?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, yep. There's just over 800 now, and with a number of fundraisers scheduled, and you know, certainly a very clear path to a million. But you know, it's probably going to take a little more. I've done that without taking a single penny of corporate PAC money. I definitely won't do that. Huizenga raised by the last filing over $1 million in corporate PAC money alone. So, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So where are you getting your money from? Are you putting some of your own dough in here?
You can look at the filings, and I have some in there. It's not insignificant, but a very, very small percentage of that. I don't have that kind of money lying around, but it's really been people. I mean, yeah, I forget the percentages. A huge percentage of our money is coming from people in district and state. Our number of individual donors is around 6,000 or so. I'm just looking at our, as far as the data we have in our filings or in our database, almost 9,000 individual contributions total. That's including duplicate contributions. But it's really, you know, folks down the street. Honestly, a significant amount of money has come from people who have never given to political candidates in their lives, and yet they feel compelled to give because they see a campaign that A is totally can win, and B is talking about the values that they care about and the values that most people here in West Michigan care about.
And for our listeners' benefit, I'm taking a look at the 2016 Michigan election results from the August primary, and the candidate in the second congressional district, and that's West Michigan, Holland, and right on up the coast there. The Democratic nominee got 26,000 votes. He ran uncontested. You compare that with what Dr. Davidson received. You received 52,000 votes, so twice what your predecessor was able to get in the primary. But that's still less than what Bill Huizenga got in the primary. He got close to 80,000. So how do you narrow that gap? Are we talking some network ad buys here? Is that in the future?
Oh, absolutely. We'll definitely be going up on TV. We're not sure exactly where yet or when. Sorry, we'll do that yet. Definitely doing that. Definitely digital persuasion. But the other thing is, you know, we've hit 50,000 doors, and we'll continue that and have a plan to hit probably 200,000 by Election Day. And the other piece, looking at this year versus last year, this year's primary, there were competitive races up and down the ticket on the Republican side. In particular, in Ottawa County, the most populous county in our district, there were three competitive state house races. Two of them are open seats. And a contested primary in the 30th, trying to replace Arlen Meekoff in the state Senate. They had, I believe, four Republicans running for that seat. And so there was certainly more of a reason for Republicans to get out and vote, particularly in Ottawa County, which is where most of that margin was. rather than Democrats. And Democrats still did. You know, we had twice the amount, twice the percentage. If you look at that relative to general election, there's less of a fall off from the general to the primary and the Republican side. A lot more of those folks historically have gone out in the primary and then stayed with it in the general. Democrats have tended not to vote as much in the primary. So the fact that it's double is extremely encouraging. You know, I think that bodes really well, irrespective of ads or doors or anything like that, just enthusiasm.
So just taking a look at the base of this district, we have it as a 63% Republican base, which it usually means is something that folks just don't even bother to touch. But what has kept you motivated? You said that you think that this is something you can win, even though the numbers just historically would make it seem next to impossible. What has motivated you to keep going and to put the kind of energy you have into this?
Well, I'd say the biggest thing that motivated me over a year and a half ago to decide to run is just that we have a representative that isn't representing the values of folks in West Michigan. We have a representative that's taking, over $1 million from corporate PACs, and that's this cycle. It's been that way every time. We have a representative who's spent unbelievable amounts of money from his campaign fund on things like meals, like golf, like travel, and nothing to do with representing people, nothing to do with convincing people why they should be voting for him. Nothing to do with spreading his word of how he shares their values. And when you look at that, again, back a year and a half ago, that was reason enough to put forth the biggest effort you could. I've never tried anything in my life without doing 100%. You can ask my wife when I did marathons and an Ironman and, medical school residency, everything. It's not worth it. I tell my kids, if you don't fail, you're not trying enough things. And if you don't try something 100%, then what's the bother? But again, now that we have data, we have polling, we have data from doors, those numbers that you're citing are very much based on historical election results. Well, we have campaigns that the last three cycles raised 15,000, 50,000, and zero. Those are numbers that, despite the fact that they're very good candidates, those campaigns have no chance of breaking through. And I have a number of, I saw recently Republicans for Gretchen Whitmer came out. We have a number of Republicans in our district, fairly high profile individuals in Holland, in that part of our district, that are on my side, that are giving me money, that have written thousands of dollars of checks to Heisinger in the past and are writing checks for my campaign and are absolutely voting for me. And I think what they see in Washington is a Republican Party that's been dominated by a president that they are not, they don't care for. They don't appreciate tariffs, raising the prices for commerce and hurting farmers in this district. They don't appreciate a party that has somehow turned a blind eye to the rule of law, and they would like to have somebody go to Washington, A, to represent their values, and B, to sort of put the brakes on what's happening at the top of the Republican Party. And they don't see someone in Heisinger that has done that, nor will do that. And they see in me somebody who's definitely going to do that.
I'm talking with Dr. Rob Davison. He is the second congressional district candidate for Democrats. And just taking a look at the second congressional district, that is Ottawa County, Muskegon, that goes up to Oceana, Lake, and Newaygo. Talk about what kind of gatherings you have done with Representative Heisinger. Have you guys had debates yet, forums, anything of that nature?
Well, our first debate was February of last year. That was a town hall he held in Baldwin, and I went there simply as a physician and a father concerned about health care. That was a debate we had for about 15 minutes on the issue of health care. That's what inspired people to ask me to run and inspired me to run for Congress. Our second was another town hall in Grand Haven last March, and since then he hasn't spoken to me directly, and since August of last year he has held zero in-person public events of any kind. He had a telephone town hall in August when he was home for 5 weeks. He's had paid events with chambers of commerce. He's had a few events with business groups and with certain companies' employees in and out of the district, but nothing in public. His team has agreed to two debates, one October 15th up in Newaygo County, the location yet to be determined, and then a second in Grand Haven on October 30th. We challenged him about 3 weeks ago to seven debates throughout the district. We feel that this year of all years, and having a Democratic campaign that is so strong, people want to hear us both talk about our vision, you know, I can talk about my vision. He really should be talking about his record, how he's voted to take away health care, how he voted for, you know, a huge tax cut, a huge windfall for big corporations and the extremely wealthy. And that's what we're hoping happens very clearly. We're hoping to get enough press there, and we certainly will do our part. You know, both of these debates happen to be in my hometown, so to speak. Grand Haven is right next to Spring Lake, where I live, and Hidalgo County is where I've been working in emergency medicine for the past 16 years of my life. So I'm very comfortable with the places we're going and the people that will be listening to the message. I hope he agrees to more. We have agreed to two other forums, one October 13th in Muskegon, another October 23rd in Ludington. And I would call on anyone who cares to hear more from candidates rather than less to ask him to please do his best to make it to those events.
Last question that I wanted to ask you, Dr. Davidson. When we talk about Ottawa County, Byron Township, going up a little bit to Muskegon, we always think of the religious element of that part of the state and the kind of the strong conservative social stance from folks who live there. For those voters who are passionate about those types of social conservative issues, how do you connect with them? How do you get them to be on your side, or how do you relate to them?
Well, it has to do with a national tour that's coming through Holland on October 8th of 2018 called Vote Common Good. And they're coming to this district specifically because, and they're a group of Christians who are trying to speak with their fellow Christians about what it means to vote for the common good and what it means to vote for values. And frankly, everything I'm talking about in this campaign is based on our shared values within this district and really probably across this country. You know, the value of people having health care, and I see the disparity in health care every single day, including last night, someone without insurance who couldn't go see a dentist and came to see me because of a dental abscess. And it's, you know, that person's third visit for the same type of complaint in the past 6 months. This is the kind of thing that so many of these folks value. They value the earth. They value education. They value immigration reform. These are values that I share with them that Huizenga, frankly, doesn't talk about, doesn't vote in the interest of those folks. And it's one of the ways we've really connected with so many people. I've had so many people come up to me and say, listen, you know, I went to church with him, or my kids played baseball together, and we've been, you know, I went to high school with him, the same Christian high school, and yet what he's done for the past eight years in Congress has not been in line with the values that I thought we shared. And they look at my campaign and said, but you are talking about those values. You know, healthcare for all is a family value, and I talk about it very openly, and they appreciate that. And a lot of those folks are absolutely coming onto our team, knocking doors, and definitely going to be voting with me on November 6th.
All right. Dr. Davidson from the 2nd Congressional District, thanks for taking time with us today for the podcast.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. You have a great day, and 46 days to go, but who's counting?
All right. Take care.
That's going to do for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Dr. Rob Davidson, Jack Spencer, Jacob Kanzler, and our special guest, Sarah Werfel. And thanks to the boss, John Roering, for letting us use his office for our studio this week, even though he doesn't know that we're doing it. He's got a lot of cool things in here, though, doesn't he? I'm glad he got that picture from the last time we had a president come to the Capitol steps. Oh. You recognize that photo?
No.
That's Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, wow.
That's the procession leading up to our state capitol with Teddy Roosevelt back in, I want to say 1906 or something somewhere in that time frame.
Got some good history in here. I see a few cool framed photos of old time Lansing.
I don't know where the Michigan State University of Michigan picture went. I'm not quite sure where that is. They've got a lot of fish up there, Sarah. You've probably seen a few of those before.
Yeah, I have a little bit of my family's a little bit obsessed with fishing, as are the Roorings. They're getting pretty darn good at it. So.
Yeah.
That's, I wonder what notes Teddy left on the desk in the White House, because, you know, hey, I didn't like it there or whatever. Why hasn't anybody else come back since if he was the last president? That's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago. Maybe, judging by the crowd, it looks like we were very hospitable to the president.
Well, the lack of trees. I mean, one thing that jumps out to me is, like, the trees right now, right? Think about how big.
Oh,
Some of the trees that are on the Capitol lawn right now.
Kyle, these old pictures of newsworthy events on the walls reminds me of one of my favorite scenes from the movie Airplane, when they're having the press conference in the airport, and the reporter say, "All right, boys, let's get some pictures." And then they just go off to the walls and take off pictures of airplanes off the walls.
All right. Well, until next week, thank you to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.